Hello, everyone. Welcome back to another episode of Movie Madness with me, your host, Khalil Jamal. I'm back today, and I'm going to be joined by two amazing guests. First, I will be joined by Diana Lee Inosanto, who will be appearing at the show this Saturday and Sunday. Toronto Comic Con is presented by Fan Expo Canada and runs from Friday, March 15th to Sunday, March 17th, with a stellar lineup of celebrity guests that are out of this world. Then I will be joined by George Buza, who voices Beast on X-Men 97. If you enjoy, please follow the podcast feed and check us out on social media at comicboys_ for more great content. I'm joined by actress Diana Lee Inosanto, I got that right, I think, who is best known for playing the villain Morgan Elsbeth in Ahsoka. How are you doing?
I am fine. Even better now that I get to be here with you. So I was looking forward to this.
I'm so glad we could make this work. So when did you become, because I've seen some interviews you've done, when did you kind of become a Star Wars fan?
Oh, I was always a Star Wars fan since childhood when I first saw A New Hope. At that time, they just called it Star Wars. And that was in the 70s. So I'm an OG. I'm an original person that saw Star Wars and was blown away by the special effects and the music and how it all came together, because nobody had seen effects like this at that time. It was just mind-blowing. So yeah, since the beginning.
So then what's your favorite Star Wars movie?
There's two. Okay, always a New Hope, for sure, because that's the one that started everything. But I have to tell you, I'm a huge fan of Rogue One. Huge fan. Wow. Yeah.
That's surprising. Actually, I didn't expect that.
Really? Why?
I feel like Star Wars fans often, I mean, Empire is probably the most common one for people to say. But
yeah,
I feel like my personal favorite is The New Hope, but I feel like people always choose one of those original trilogy ones.
Yeah.
One of the main saga ones.
Yeah, Empire Strikes Back is to me my third favorite, but there's something about Rogue One because it is basically like a prequel before A New Hope in essence,
right.
You know, and that immediate time and era. And I just loved how it ended with Darth Vader going down the corridor. You start to see how it all came together, and yeah, and the resistance, and you know, and how they all laid their lives down to make sure that the galaxy, you know, would have a new hope. So yeah, that's why.
So in Ahsoka, I don't think it's a spoiler at this point, but it seems like your character dies now. Mm-hmm. We also know that in Star Wars, no one actually ever dies, because that's not how the Force works. So have you had any conversations about returning? Do you want to see your character return?
I would love to see my character return. I mean, but it's up to those Star Wars gods to decide if Morgan Elsbeth truly can, you know, in live action come back, if that's what you're talking about, live action. But I mean, It's interesting because, you know, Lucasfilm, for very good reasons, is very secretive about their storyline. So we don't, we never know, you know, what's going to happen from one day to the next, or I mean, from 1 month to 1 year. We just don't know. I mean, just to put it in context, I didn't even know my character when she first appeared on Mandalorian even had a name. I just knew she was the magistrate. So when the night it aired, I was just stunned that my character's name was Morgan Elsbeth. They kept that a secret, you know? So they're really good at that. Yeah. So, but I'm hoping, we'll see. And everybody keeps asking me, and I can't give them an answer.
So that's interesting, because Dave Filoni, who is kind of now in charge of Star Wars, at least creatively, kind of seems like a very fun guy. When you're kind of interacting with him, especially over the course of like Ahsoka, what kind of person does he come off as? Like, does he feel like he's very passionate about the stuff? Does he give you a lot of flexibility with your character? How do all those dynamics work?
Well, I love talking about Dave Filoni. He's the best boss you can have in the galaxy, along with Jon Favreau, okay? Because these two men together collectively changed my life. When you're working with Dave Filoni, he is very clear about who these characters are. And he will only give you enough information in the moment to where you can get through your scene and you know, educate the actor about the character. So, and then I do wonder, it'd be a great question to ask him if he's also still making discoveries about the character. I don't know, but he is amazingly very giving, and you know, he wants you to succeed, and he knows, he just knows what he wants. And that's wonderful for me as an actor, because now I have more clarity. But you know, I mean, he's also really good of if there's little gestures I might do to add to the character, he'll go, oh, that works, or that's good. You know, I was even amazed, even in my fight scene, I had improvised a little bit. I had walked away a little bit from the choreography when I wasn't in contact with Rosario, and they kept all that in. So I you know, you just never know if it works for the character, if it works for the storyline, Dave will always keep it, you know? So, but he's a joy. He is just, honestly, he is just unbelievable to work with. And he's funny.
So, so when you talk about fighting, obviously you are a martial arts expert, right? Obviously you have connections to Bruce Lee, and obviously your father was a stunt person or a martial arts person. When you look at Star Wars and fighting in Star Wars, right? Because you know there's, you know, crazy fans on the internet who will basically break down every single thing you do to see if it's accurate to what it's supposed to be. Was there ever any, I guess, concern on your part, or maybe part, like, did you actually, I guess, study kind of how people fought in Star Wars in order to make sure that you weren't doing things which would be almost picked apart on the internet?
You know, for me, if you go back to my godfather, the late Bruce Lee, he always said to express yourself, meaning to be true to who you are. And so as a martial artist, I will always try to be true to my roots. And the people that I work with, whether it was Mandalorian or Ahsoka, you know, they know my background, and they tend to cater to some of their movements to what I can do. And you know, and they're open-minded about what maybe I might like. The interesting thing with me and Q, she had a very, who was our fight choreographer in Ahsoka, she had a very specific vision, and I loved how she came up with making contact with the Talzin blade to kind of set off its own powers. And I thought that was really unique. And so I went with it. And I'm lucky that I was born and raised in a martial arts family that taught me to be open-minded, or as they would say, empty your cup. You know, my father was, my godfather is one of his leading students that carried on his art and system. So I was always exposed to different martial arts from different countries. And I always had an understanding of the history and era of the time in which maybe that martial arts system came into play. And so for me, it worked when I was on Star Wars, no matter if it was Mandalorian or Ahsoka, I could actually tap into my unique abilities. As far as the internet, you know, people may say what they want to say. You know, some loved it. There were some people that will analyze it. But honestly, too, it has to be approved by Dave and company, you know, and if this works for them. So I have to kind of go with that.
When you look at some of the conversations, especially, I remember this very prominent with The Force Awakens, and with this idea of having, you know, a very prominent female Jedi, right? There was a lot of
Casey's project. Okay.
Yeah, there was a lot of conversations on, you know, generally, some of which were coming from very bad places on the internet about kind of women in Star Wars. You've seen a lot of this stuff. I'm sure you've seen a lot of this stuff kind of, you know, bubble up and hate toward certain actors.
Oh no, what? The dark side of gossip. Oh no.
Well, did you experience any of that stuff during Ahsoka when that show was coming out, or did you, wait, what was your experience with that?
No, actually, if anything, I've gotten a lot of love and a lot of just support, and I can't talk for other people, but I can only express my own journey. I mean, even in the martial arts world, I've had so much support from so many different communities, from different martial arts styles and systems, and they've been just wonderful. you know, and some of them too are these communities, you know who my father is. My father is not only a renowned martial artist, he was also a military man. So even from like the military community, law enforcement, just all around, just different communities, I've had great support. Some of them know that I'm the mother of an adult son with autism. I've had a lot of love from the autism community that talk to me, and they come and visit me at comic cons. And then I get a lot of later, I call them over 40 generation, that go, wow, this is amazing that you had this pivotal breakthrough in your career so much later in life, you know, when most people would have given up. And so, no, I haven't had that experience, actually, you know. And if I were, I mean, I would have to say, you know, I would have to just move on and ignore it, because there's nothing I can do. People have a right to think what they think and express what they want. But no, I've been really good. I've been very fortunate in that way.
Well, it's good you haven't had those experiences, because of course, you know, internet can be a very terrible place sometimes.
Yeah. But you know, I truly believe philosophically, you know, sometimes my father used to say this, sometimes it's he used to use football wisdom of all things, because he was a martial artist, but he would say, you know, sometimes when you're carrying the ball, somebody's always going to want to tackle you. You know what I mean? And you can't control what other people say or think out there. That's in all aspects of life. You can only take one step at a time and direct your own life and focus on what you can do. So, yeah. And I would say that, you know, give that advice to anybody, you know.
So are you working on anything right now? What are you kind of doing right now?
Actually, there is a few things I'm working on, but I have an NDA, or I call them friend DAs. But I am getting geared to direct a couple of projects, and as well as act in some other ones. And yeah, I'm excited about that, because, you know, my roots were both as writer and director. And that's kind of inevitably how I found a pathway to inevitably being discovered by Dave and John. So yeah, I'm kind of getting ready to put the director's hat on as well.
Maybe they'll get you to direct a Star Wars movie.
Oh my goodness, could you imagine that?
That'd be awesome.
Yeah, and I would definitely want it to be the right fit and something that I'm definitely ready for, because, you know, I definitely care about the franchise very much.
So I don't know how much I've got a minute. We're gonna make this.
Oh yeah, I am so I'm good. So
I just want to get cut. Yeah. So I wanted to ask a question which might take you a little bit longer to answer, but when you look at the state of action movies now, right? There's been a lot of criticism toward, I guess, kind of the blandness of some action movies and how the choreography is kind of, you know, how it's done. What do you feel about that? And do you feel like that's valid? Do you feel like there is this level of kind of laziness almost with action movies?
Well, I don't know. It depends on what example you're giving. I mean, every film has its own unique fingerprint. And so I know this from being a former stunt woman. And so a lot of times you have to first understand what is the vision of the director. If he wants a very certain style of fighting, there might be a certain style of editing for the fight. And then you have this in the stunt coordinator and the fight choreographer, and sometimes they're the one and the same person, will always cater first to the director's vision. So in a way, you're at the mercy of whatever the director wants. With that said, you know, I mean, I think there's been some great choreography out there. My father's helped, you know, groom a lot of great choreographers in the business right now, from all the John Wick people to some of the Dune people. I mean, there's just different levels of expressing it. And I can only speak for me, I look at martial arts or any kind of choreography like almost like music. So what's your taste in music? Do you like it fast and rhythmic and really, you know, where the beats are bom, 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 bom? Or do you want it slow and easy and more precise, where it's really, we're looking slowly at what's going on with the characters, where it's in a way character driven, you know, and how's the approach of the director? So I can't really make a generalized statement over the state of choreography, because I think there's been some great stuff. It's just all about what are people's taste, you know, and there's right. so many unique examples of that.
And so I guess my last question would be, what was your reaction when you got the call that you got the part in Ahsoka? Or in, I guess, The Mandalorian initially?
Initially, yeah. One of tears. I cried. I was so happy because I couldn't, for the longest time, get a theatrical agent. And so I didn't understand how they even found me, to be honest with you. And it was Google how they discovered me. I did my independent film over 10 years ago called The Sensei. And John, thank goodness John had suggested to Dave, I guess, that they should find organically a real martial artist who could hopefully act. And so Dave went on Google and put woman martial artist. And somehow it came to my photo from my movie and he clicked on it and it led him to the trailer of my movie. And he goes, huh, who's this woman? And so he was investigating my film, The Sensei, and looked at my background. He goes, oh, this is Bruce Lee's goddaughter. Oh my goodness, this is Dan Onsano's daughter. And so they kind of, you know, asked around about my background. And that's when they decided to have me come in and read for Sarah Finn's office and her people. And I honestly thought it was a joke at first when I got the call from my manager, who really represents me as a director. And he just goes, you got to get ready. And I did my best. I prepped as fast as I could with my son with autism, who was the only one that could read lines with me without identifying that it was a Star Wars movie. Because you would think it's a military period piece film that I was reading right. from. But yeah, I was stunned and I cried. But who knew? Google. Google is my godmother.
That's crazy.
My furry godmother. I know. Crazy, right? Seriously.
With that being said, thank you so much for taking the time. We definitely want to have you back on, you know, when you've got some of your stuff that you can talk about.
Yeah, I'd love to.
Thank you. Thank you so much for your time and have a great day.
Oh, thank you. Take care. Nice meeting you.
You too. Nice meeting you. Bye.
Bye.
Hello, everyone. I'm back. I'm joined by George Booth, the guy who plays Beast in X-Men. He's got a show coming out. I don't know if you heard. It comes out this week or next week, I guess, when you're hearing this. How are you doing?
Fine. Today's actually the big day because they're having the premiere screening down in L.A.
Oh, wow. Okay.
That's going to be taking place today, and there's going to be a screening in Toronto yep. on Saturday at Fan Expo.
Yeah, I'll be there for that one. I'll be there for that one. And you're going to be in Toronto for Fan Expo?
Yeah.
You're going to be, you know, talking
to
people?
We'll be there Friday to meet the fans, and then Saturday for the screening.
Yeah, it's going to be great. You're doing a Q&A with the yeah. people from the movie podcast who are, you know, awesome. So that'll be fun. Now, I don't know. I'm sure you've heard now, but there's some news that came out, I think, 24 hours ago. And it was that the showrunner for the X-Men show was fired or let go. What are your kind of initial thoughts about that? I don't know if you had a chance to kind of process that.
Well, it's not really up to me. I mean, anytime somebody loses a job, it's a sad idea. But I have no idea what went on or why. I got a phone call that said that they parted ways. And that was right. it. And that they're proceeding as, full speed ahead.
So have you heard, is season 2 finished at this point of the show?
I have no idea. We've only done a handful of episodes. Okay. And whether or not that's all we're going to do or not so far, again, we just wait for the call to come and say, okay, we're doing another episode and come on in.
Okay.
But we're not really in the loop of a lot of the things that happen behind the scenes.
Right.
Nobody really is, you know, that's a performer. You're at the bottom of the food chain, really.
Yeah, that's fair. So what was it like? And I know we kind of talked, when we first talked, it was kind of, I think the show had just been in, the revival was just announced. I don't think you had started doing anything for it. What has it been like kind of, what was it like kind of going back, getting back into that role?
Well, it was very exciting because we were recording in the exact same studio we did the original series in.
Really?
So it was, oh yeah. That's so crazy. It was like deja vu. You walked in, and even the engineer So it was like walking back in time. It was very exciting.
Did you feel younger walking into that studio?
Pardon?
Do you feel younger walking into that studio?
Oh, if that was as easy as that, no, unfortunately. Time has taken its toll physically, but emotionally and spiritually, yeah, walking back into that studio and into the same room and the same cubicle, you know, there was nothing like it, I'll tell you.
So when you look, so where does Beast as a character kind of, without obviously spoiling anything, where does he kind of, where's his mind at the beginning of this show, right? Like, where is he kind of emotionally at the beginning of the show?
Well, he's exactly where he was at the end of season 5, because this is what we did, was we picked up where we left off.
Right.
Magneto and Professor X were off the planet. He was healing, and we were all sent all over the place. This is how the show ended.
Right.
And so this is where we picked up. And everybody
You picked up right after the show, the original show end.
Yeah, this was the whole reason they called it X-Men 97, was right, because they looked at the script and where we finished and where the storyline was, and they picked it up right from there and brought it back into the timeline. So that's exactly where the character was. It was a struggle to get back together, to reestablish the X-Men. But I'm not giving anything away, because this is all what was happening
right in
the final episode.
So then as the show kind of progresses, what kind of, again, without, obviously, because you can't spoil anything, what kind of happens? Like, does Beast have struggles, and how was it to kind of, again, get back?
Well, again, this is like giving spoilers out, because you can't really tell what a character is going to be going through without giving stuff away.
So, okay, so then was it hard to get back into that mindset?
Everybody's still the same guy they were back in the 90s.
Right.
We're the same character. We're doing the same stuff. Beast is still solving problems and cracking wise and doing quotes. Solving problems and being the scientist and the doctor that he is.
So what was it like, and I know we kind of talked about this before, but what was it like kind of seeing everyone again from that original cast, or the people who are returning at least, and what was it like recording with them and kind of, you know, re-entering this world?
Well, the recording is actually done solo. We only passed each other in the hallway as we were going from Cal would finish his session and I'd be going in, and that only happened once. Usually it's at different times, different days, so you don't really run into people. We spent more time together as a cast doing Comic-Cons than we have actually recording, because we're doing a whole bunch of those. We've done a couple of them before the pandemic, and then we started doing them again. So that's we've kept in touch.
So who is kind of, as you kind of go on Comic-Cons with these people, who is your favorite kind of member of the cast, or who are kind of your favorite members of the cast?
Well, that's like saying who's your favorite kid, you know? You can't pick a favorite. You know, I like hanging out with everybody.
Are there any
Cal
in the
and I
new
travel
edition?
Together a lot, because I used to park my car at his driveway, and then we'd take the limo together to the airport. But ever since they tore up the Gardner Expressway and made a mess out of the entire east-west transportation system, it's a lot easier for me to go to the airport directly from my house than to go all the way out to his house.
Right.
So, you know, we run into each other at the airport and we hang out together. And Allison Court directs My Little Pony.
Yeah.
And I think we've all done an episode or two of that, because she's brought us all in. So we see each other from time to time. But no favorites.
Are there any of the new cast members who you kind of been, you know, maybe either surprised about how.
Well, we don't know who they are. We don't know who they are because they're down in Los Angeles and we're recording here in Toronto.
Right.
So we haven't met any of the people who are new, any of the new characters that have been added, we haven't met. And we haven't seen any of the episodes. We've only seen the time. No, we haven't seen anything. The screening this weekend will be the first time that we've seen anything, except for those little snippets that when we had to do dialogue replacement.
Right.
We would see like 60 seconds of the show. And that's it. They wouldn't run it for you so that you could see the entire episode. You saw what you had to do. And from that, all we could tell was that the animation was spectacular.
Right.
And, you know, the storylines held true to what we had done in the 90s. So we were pretty happy with it.
So then was this experience, I guess, recording this the same as it was when you recorded the 90s one? Was it the same level of like separation between, you know, in recording sessions, the same level of like really not seeing that much until, you know, it was ready? Was this kind of the same, or was this a different
experience? Actually, you see more now because technology has advanced so much. When we did the original series, we record everything was sent down to Los Angeles by courier on cassette tape.
Right.
I mean, now it's digitally everything. All our recording sessions are just like this interview on Zoom.
Right.
All the people that you are required to or want to be seen are in little boxes across the screen. And there's a director who is also on the screen. And you're in front of a microphone sitting by yourself in the studio. And there's an engineer behind the glass. And that's right. It. I mean, before when we were doing the original series, everybody's timelines would overlap so that there would be scenes that you did together. If there were only two people in it. You know, in the beginning, we did the entire drama, the radio drama type readings, right, where everybody was in the room together. But it was too time consuming. And it defeated the purpose of spontaneity in reacting to the line before. Because there was such a long pause, they had to shut off all the microphones because of the bleed and then turn them back on again. And by that time, the moment had passed. And so you were doing just the same as if you'd gone in there solo. Except there was more time wasted because everybody would be horsing around.
So do you feel like the experience... So I guess if you had to kind of outside of the practicalities of it, if you had to take an experience, right? Do you think that first time when you filmed or when you recorded the initial show was kind of the more fun experience?
Well, it's hard to say. Yeah, I mean, it was more fun because we were all together and there was a group effort and then the whole recording session and we all hung out together in the green room of the studio. So, yeah, it was a more social event. I mean, now everything's booked, you know, 1 hour or 45 minutes at a time. You go in and you chat a little bit with the engineer and the receptionist, and then you go home.
Right.
There's no real social. I mean, that all changed with COVID anyway, because that studio used to have a game room where there were pinball machines and a pool table and a foosball table and the voice actors and the announcers that all go in there and hang out between sessions. And, you know, these were the old days when you were going from studio to studio doing recordings of one cartoon to the other. You know, those days are pretty gone.
Now, was that do you think that was more of a COVID change, or do you think that was more of a technology change in terms of like the restructuring?
Well, COVID completely changed the entire aspect of auditioning. Everything is self-taped now.
Right.
Going to an audition used to be a big social event. You'd run into all the people you hadn't seen in a long time, and you'd hang out in the waiting room and have chat and catch up, and then you'd go for coffee later. So it became a social event rather than a job interview.
Right.
And now that everything, you just sit at your desk and you tape your audition and you send it off and you never run into anybody anymore.
Now, when it comes to, I guess, because now I'm interested, now I want to kind of go down this whole rabbit hole a little bit, but when you look at how these things have changed, do you think there is a disadvantage for younger people trying to get into the business? Do you think that this kind of setup hurts them in a sense because it isn't as social?
Well, in a sense, yes and no. I mean, before you had to get in a door to be able to meet somebody. I mean, these days you're sending everything digitally. I was in an office of the of an agent that I had in New York City once. And the doors were locked and you couldn't come in and have an interview with the agent unless you had an appointment. And there was a mail slot in the door with a wastebasket on the other side. And on the outside of the door, it said, insert resumes here. So that kind of gives you an idea of how hard it was way back then. And this was like in 1983.
Right.
And it's always been very difficult to get in that door. And right. These days, it's the audition lists were so long, even when we were doing them in person, you'd go to a call for a voiceover job, say an audition for a commercial.
Right.
And hundreds of people would be auditioning. But they would all be doing it in person. Well, this is why it turned into a big social event, because you always had a little party going. But these days, the same number of people, if not more, have the opportunity to send in an audition tape. And, you know, if people see what they want to see, then, you know, you got a shot at it.
Right.
So it's more accessible digitally than it was when you actually had to go through a door.
Right. Now, in my mind, and maybe I'm wrong on this, and so if I am, obviously correct me, but I feel like there is something more when there is this kind of bond between actors, right? Like you think, and maybe this applies more to when you're on camera, but like I feel like there is this idea that if you kind of genuinely enjoy being around the people you're acting with, it kind of manifests itself to some extent in the chemistry, in the performance on screen. Is that kind of the same as voice acting? Is it, do you see
well,
that
yeah,
kind
because
of thing?
You're still there's no real difference between the on camera and voice acting, except for the fact that you're not being seen, but you're
right.
still going through the absolute same process of developing a character and of interacting. And if you've already got a relationship, like one of my very best friends from way back when is Mike Ironside.
Right.
And we did a miniseries together called The Last Chapter. And then the story was about these bikers who were two best friends all their lives. And so that brought an awful lot to the screen too, because we already had that relationship. You didn't have to create it. That already
right.
existed. And so all the action from the movie stemmed from that relationship, which was the foundation of the story.
So then obviously you said you didn't meet kind of the people who played the new character, new cast members. Did that kind of affect your interaction with them when it came to how you were able to prepare when you were recording lines?
You never have interaction. You read the script and you imagine the entire scene playing off in your head, and then you rehearse your lines, or you don't, whatever your process is. But all you're reading are your own lines.
Right.
Occasionally, somebody might feed them to you, but that seldom happens. Most of the time, you just go in there with a prepared script and you do your lines, and that's it. There's no interaction. There's nobody on the other end except the producers and the director. Occasionally,
right.
if they need to, they will give you the line reading before your line so that you do have something to react to. But generally, you're just there doing three takes of each line and then moving on to the next one, three takes of each line, move on to the next one. Then they pick what they like and they either make you go back and do it again with some direction, or they say moving on. So that's pretty much the process of what goes on in the studio.
So you're saying we very rarely hear, you know, lines leading up to your lines. Does it make it harder for you when you have
this is the whole process of acting and directing.
Right.
Like when a director directs a movie and he's reading the script for the first time, he's watching that movie in his head.
Right.
And he's developing all the shots that he's going to be using in his head, knowing that, okay, at this point, I'm going to go in for a close-up. At this point, I'm going to go in for a wide shot. And this is what he's seeing. This is the gift and the talent of somebody who is a director or an actor, is he is able to visualize the scene in his head. And when I was doing radio drama, this was exactly what the director used to tell us. He says, just let the thing, just like you're reading a book, let it play out in your mind, and it will come through your voice. So that's the technique. And you can do it on your own because you hear those other lines in your head the way that they should be spoken or the way that you feel they should be spoken. And then they put them all together, and that's what makes it work.
Now, obviously, you know, unlike the show where it picks up right when the last where the last season ended, you have not necessarily, you're older than you were when that show initially, when you were initially reporting that show. Was it difficult to kind of get your voice to a point where it felt like you could kind of do that, you could kind of be that character and not sound like you're older?
Well, no, because our voices really haven't changed that much. And we all had to re-audition for these same roles to make sure that we didn't sound like crotchety old geezers. And it really, your voice doesn't change that very much. Right. Unless you've gone completely feeble, then you're... yeah. But, you know, we're still pretty hale and healthy as a rule.
Right. So they made you re-audition for these roles?
Yeah, they wanted to hear what we sounded like 28 years later. I mean, it makes sense.
I guess I would want
to hear it. You know, you hear somebody in the past, then you want to hear what they sound like today. Like you said, you know, have they aged? Does it sound in their voice like they're old? And luckily, they liked the way we sounded. So,
did you rewatch the original show before you started doing recording lines for the show?
Yeah.
Did you think about watching it again? Like, was it better than you remembered? How did it kind of hold up in your mind?
No, it held up great, which is why it was number one on Disney Plus when they brought it back. The show was great. And this is, again, a tip of the hat to Julia and Eric Lewald and the entire crew that wrote this, and Larry Houston. You know, these were the people that that wrote and produced and brought these characters to us. And then we were just overjoyed at being able to have these words to say.
Right.
Because even if you're the greatest actor, if you don't have good words to say, it's going to be a turkey. You know,
yeah.
There's been a lot of big stars that have done movies that had bad writing that just didn't work.
Right.
And no matter how big of a star they cast in the lead, it just didn't save the movie.
Right.
So we had the words to say that made our job that much easier.
Now, when you watch yourself, obviously, and you watch the show again, I mean, are you critical of yourself? Like, are there points where you were watching, you're like, man, I could have done this better, or, you know, I should have done
absolutely.
This.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, yeah. And any actor who isn't, I think, is so full of himself that he should have a look. Because you're always critical of what you've done.
Right.
Oh, geez, why did I do that? You know, that was a wrong choice. And I mean, sometimes you look at it and go, okay, well, that was all right. But, you know, you never jump up and down and go, wow, that was fabulous. But,
right. Now, with this show, are you hoping that people kind of see it are you hoping that you're able to get a lot of those people who grew up with the show to kind of, you know, fall in love with the show? Or are you hoping that there's a younger generation of people who kind of, you know, maybe explore the original show and the show for the first time?
Well, I would say that, you know, you'd have to explore the original show. And this is the way that they ran Disney Plus ran the original X-Men for a couple of years before we actually started recording the new one.
Right.
And it was based on that. There was a whole new generation that was introduced to it, because even at the Comic-Cons, we would have the fans that watched this in the 90s bring their kids in and say, I've introduced my son or my daughter to X-Men, and now they're big fans, and we can hardly wait for the new show to come out. So I think that we've already generated that with the old show being on the air again. There's a whole new generation that's been introduced to it. And again, here I am on a soapbox, but I think the show is even more timely and more apt than it was back in the 90s with the message that we're trying to convey about coexistence and tolerance for each other and accepting people who are different.
Right.
You know, that things have not gotten better.
Yeah. You know what's interesting about that? I saw this, there's some people on Twitter or X, whatever it's called now. And they were talking about, I guess, some of the clips from the X-Men show. And they were like, oh no, it's about, you know, they're trying to push values on us or whatever, right? And I was thinking, I was sitting there thinking like, but what the X-Men, that's what they've been since the beginning of time. How do you kind of react to people who are kind of like, you know, talking about how they're trying to push, I guess, quote unquote, woke values or whatever they want to say onto people because they're trying to emphasize this inclusion? And what do you think about that kind of narrative, I guess, for people?
Well, you can't really draw a line and say, we'll accept these people, but we won't accept those people.
Right.
You know, all men were created equal applies to everyone.
Right.
It's not, there's no little subclause except.
Right.
And this is what X-Men was all about back in the 90s.
Right.
So I have not seen any of these clips that that they're talking about, and I don't look at X. I never was on Twitter. Right. I'm not on any social media.
Which is a good thing, I think.
Well,
because of how much negativity there is.
Human interaction has taken a big hit.
Yeah.
People don't talk to each other anymore. You can't talk to anybody on a telephone. And if you make a mistake on a computer, you're down a rabbit hole. You know, the deal is done, and then you try and undo it, and you can't talk to anybody anymore. So two people will be sitting next to each other, and they're texting each other. They're not talking. And I tell you, the human conversation is going to take a huge hit because everybody texting, you don't talk anymore.
Right.
And it takes a lot longer to actually write a sentence than it does to say it.
Yeah.
And you get to hear the person, and you don't know what kind of emotions are being expressed when the people are texting, unless they're all in capital letters, I guess. And that means.
Or emojis.
Or emojis, which. You know, again, this is all at the expense of human interaction.
Right.
And that's exactly what X-Men is about, is that it's about humans interacting.
Right.
And mutants interacting with humans and everybody getting along. It's a hard sell.
Well, with that being said, thank you so much for taking the time to come on and chat today.
Thanks for having me back, and we look forward to seeing you at the show.
Absolutely. I will be there. I will not miss that because, you know, it's going to be so much fun to watch a show that, you know, I grew up watching the reruns of the show because I'm much too young to have watched when the show initially aired. But, you know, I'm very excited. I love the X-Men. And obviously, you know, I can't wait to see how great this show is. And thank you again for coming on. And
well, thank you too.
And hopefully everyone comes to see you at Toronto Comic-Con. Yeah, yeah. Absolutely.
Have a good show.
Perfect. Thank you. Have a great weekend. Have a great time at Toronto Comic-Con.